This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. You're now entering Place to Be Nation Sports Lounge. And now, here are your hosts, Roger Morissette, Chad Campbell, Andrew Flanagan, Jeff Machado, and Keith Schmidt.
Talking swamp sweating. That's for the bathtub full of sweat.
Hello, folks. Welcome to this week's edition of the Sports Lounge. I'm your host, Cowboy Roger Morissette. Special edition of the lounge tonight. Generally, there's four or five of us, and we talk football and, you know, some other sports. Generally, about a two-hour show, kind of a roundtable discussion. If you're a new listener tonight, that's how the lounge usually goes. Tonight, we have a very special edition. We're going to be joined just a little bit later by the voice of the Providence College Friars, John Rook. And we're going to talk some Friars basketball. We're going to talk some Big East basketball. We're going to talk some history of the program. And so in the lounge with me tonight is just myself, the cowboy, and the one, the only, the straw that stirs the drink, the guy who's been a PC fan since before I was around. It's a Cowboy Senior. How's it going, Cowboy Senior?
Great, Cowboy. I'm really excited about tonight's show. PC basketball has been a passion of mine literally since the mid-60s when my older brother was a student there. And we've had some great experiences together going to Friar games and watching the Friars and having John on with us tonight, who's been their radio voice for the last 25 years. This is going to be a really special podcast tonight. I can't wait to get going. I'm very, very excited about this.
It's good enthusiasm, Cowboy Senior. Yes, we're very excited to have John here, and take a break in a couple minutes, and then we'll connect with Mr. Rook. Before then, I'd like to talk a little bit about PlaceToBeNation.com, some of the things we have going on at PlaceToBeNation.com. So whether you're a sports fan, wrestling fan, someone who's into music, pop culture, PlaceToBeNation.com is kind of your one-stop shop for all these things. We're currently running a tournament. Started out with over 600 entries to determine the greatest song from my favorite decade, the decade I grew up in, the 90s. So every day at midnight, another 10 songs are thrown out there. You go on to PlaceToBeNation.com. You can vote for your favorite songs. Basically, 10 songs are out there. 5 will advance, and we're gonna run the tournament until it comes down to one song. So we're gonna be naming the greatest song of the 90s at PlaceToBeNation.com. And there's a lot of other great content here at PlaceToBeNation.com and other podcasts that I would strongly suggest you check out. Cowboy Senior, you mind getting up, maybe going to grab a drink, and when we come back, we'll have Mr. Rook here?
Yeah, I can't wait. Friar talk, it doesn't get any better than this.
Okay, so please don't touch that dial, as they say. We'll be back shortly, joined by John.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com, The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
This is the king of old school, Steve Corino, and you've heard all the rumors, and it's true. The Steve Corino Show is here. We talk about wrestling. We talk about baseball, movies, television, anything you want to talk about. New guest every week. That's right, the Steve Corino Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
Hey, this is Bauer from The Bauer Show, sports and more. You can check out The Bauer Show podcast every Wednesday and Friday right here at placetobenation.com.
The Bauer Show.
Chad, do you hate it when commercials run and run?
What do you mean, Parv?
Oh, never mind.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play on placetobenation.com and find us on iTunes. We are the only WCW Supercard exclusive podcast.
Greetings, friends. Ben Morse from Place to Be Nation's Main Event here. Tired of other podcasts constantly stuck in the past? Every other week, we give you a roundtable discussion of what's happening in wrestling today. Place to Be Nation's Main Event. We're holding everybody else down.
Looking for something different in your pro wrestling podcasts? Look no further than the Pro Wrestling Super Show. Join me, Stephen Graham, every week as I'm joined by a rotating door of guests as we discuss a single topic each show, ranging from ECW pay-per-view reviews, wrestler snapshots, top six lists, and anything else you can think of. That's the Pro Wrestling Super Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
So you've got the script, yeah? You all got it?
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds terrible. The Titans of Wrestling... Oh, brilliant. Sorry. The Titans of Wrestling are...
Pete, I'm a lead analyst for the show and breakdown matches.
Kelly, lead historian. I'm a jobber lover. Are you?
Johnny and I drink.
And yes, me, Pop. We watch old school wrestling and love it.
Titans of Wrestling.
You know you want to hear it.
What's going on? This is the Godfather, Nate Milton, with an offer you cannot refuse. Each and every week, join Marcus Vandenberg and myself for the world's most dangerous sports show and the program that's changing the game one show at a time, the Kings of Sport Podcast. Available exclusively on placetobenation.com, your one-stop spot for the best in sports and pop culture.
Hey, sports fans, this is Dr. G for Extra Point, Place to Be Nation's traditional sports talk podcast. Every episode, Scott Criscullo and I talk everything from the Big Four leagues to all the hot sports news with exclusive guests and analysts. Email us your comments and questions at extrapoint@placetobenation.com. That's the Extra Point, exclusively on placetobenation.com.
In Rhode Island and looking for great food and a fun atmosphere, we'll be sure to stop by Bonehead's Wing Bar, 131 Washington Street in West Warwick, with over 65 different wing sauces and dozens of sandwiches, burgers, and appetizers. In a fully stocked bar, Bonehead's has something for everyone. Bonehead's also shows every WWE and UFC pay-per-view, features live music, weekly trivia, and much, much more. So, be sure to stop in, tell Matt and the crew that Place to Be Nation sent you, and become a Bonehead today.
Hey, this is Rob Naylor. Do you still enjoy pro wrestling? Believe it or not, I still do. So you better join myself and Will on the Google Wrestling Podcast exclusively at placetobenation.com.
Shit, I wasn't ready. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening and... Shit. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening to guys talk about old school wrestling... Follow me and Charles on Wrestling with the Past podcast on Place to Be Nation.
What's up, wrestling fans? This is Jeff Peck, and you can check out my wrestling podcast, The Still Real to Us Show, every Saturday right here at placetobenation.com. It is a wrestling podcast from a fan's perspective, and we're not doing it in our mom's basement. So check it out every Saturday right here at placetobenation.com.
It's still real to me, damn it!
Looking for new wrestling, sports, and pop culture voices? Head over to placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. We have an extremely talented staff that covers comics, video games, and all facets of entertainment. Our sports coverage spans all the major professional and collegiate sports, including MMA. Our fresh takes on professional wrestling are some of the best on the internet. Also, be sure to check out our friends at thehistoryofwwe.com, prowrestlingonly.com, Scott Keith blog at rspwfaq.net, and piledriverwrestling.net.
Everybody, welcome back to the Sports Lounge. Hope you enjoyed the break there. As promised, we've got a radio voice of the Providence College Friars for the last 25 years. Am I right about that?
25. We're now in year 26, Roger. How are you? It's good to be with you guys.
Doing great. And, this is John Rook, everybody, radio voice of the Friars for the last 25 years. And we're honored to have him on so that we can talk a little PC basketball, a little Big East basketball, and I think he and Cowboy Senior may swap a story or two later about PC. So how's everything going, John?
Excellent. I'm ready for the season to get going. I have to admit there's been a little bit of anticipation here, you know, in a couple of ways. I think first, you know, you're kind of anxious, and I've been kind of anxious to see what kind of a, you know, life there is after a performance like what we saw, you know, at the tail end of last year from Bryce Cotton. And there's another part of me that's also anxious because I've felt all along for the last year, maybe even two, that by the time LaDante Hinton was a senior, that this team could really be something special. It's gonna be a different team. That's the one thing that I think most everyone will be aware of from the get-go. It's not going to be the same type of team. You won't see as much like, you know, motion offense and such, you know, out on the perimeter, because you've got guys here that with depth now that you can create plays for and move different pieces of the puzzle in and out. But I think this team will be, it should be one of the better defensive teams we've seen in a long while. And I think that's what will actually help them out quite a bit in the Big East Conference this year, because I don't know too many people that will be able to match up with what they'll have, you know, in the front court.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's a great segue, John. So obviously the Friars losing generational type of player in Bryce Cotton and, you know, to a lesser extent, Kadeem Batts is a huge challenge for this year's team. And who do you think's going to step up or needs to step up for them? And do you think they can do it?
Well, yeah, I definitely think they can. Stepping up is going to have to, you know, come from several different sources. You know, first and foremost, you've got, you know, Carson DeRozier, who's moving in as the starting center. And yeah, I don't know that he alone could replace what Kadeem had a year ago. I know that Carson and I have talked about this on the Tuli show, and we talked about this a little bit as well, kind of offhanded. But, you know, one of the things he worked on the hardest in the offseason was to improve his foul line jumper, because the Friars expect teams to come out and zone them, thinking that that's one of their weak spots. And frankly, if I were an opposing team right now looking at trying to defend Providence, that's one thing I think I would do. I think I'd pack it in, and I think I'd make them try to shoot over me. And on top of that, you know, you're going up against a Providence team that's one of the biggest teams, you know, in recent memory for sure, maybe one of the biggest teams ever. You know, I mean, it is the first time in 88 years of basketball at Providence College that they've had 2 7-footers on the roster at the same time. So, you know, you've got that kind of height and that kind of ability. It stands to reason they should be a good rebounding team, but rebounding is not so much about height and physical play as it is about desire. So DeRozier's going to be part of it. I think LaDante Hinton will also be another part of it. But the guy to me that's the big X factor here that could really separate PC from the pack has been Ben Till. You know, the freshman from Delaware he's a wow. I don't think anybody really realized what Providence was getting when they signed him. I know that he was sort of an afterthought almost a second choice, if you will, to the kid, you know, Abu, who went down to North Carolina State. But I got to tell you, Malik Abdul-Abu is still going to be undoubtedly a very good player for NC State, I don't think the Friars are going to be sorry that they got Ben Till. He already has a body every bit as chiseled as Kadeem had, and Kadeem was a fifth-year senior a year ago. So he's got an NBA body ready right now. And his, growth potential is unlimited. I can't wait to see him out there playing for, you know, more than 20, 25 minutes a game. If, you know, he's got enough of an outside game and enough of an outside shot where he's going to pull some of the bigs away from the basket. But his greatest strength may be going to the basket, and I hope that he remembers that, because I know part of the reason why he might not have been as highly thought of in the high school ranks is because he fell in love with his outside shot. So they want to make sure that he's, you know, an inside-outside player first. But I think between DeRozier and Ben Till and LaDante, and then you can't leave out Tyler Harris, who will probably end up playing, you know, some four as well. You know, those are the guys that will end up having to make up on the inside for what Kadeem bought a year ago.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And so it sounds, Sounds like you're answering the question of who you think is going to make the biggest impact of the new guys. But outside of him, what do you think of the other new additions to the team?
Well, I think Mintel has I think he'll be the one that people notice the most right off, just because, you know, it's kind of like, you know, it's almost like Kadeem almost never left, because he's really as big and as strong and as powerful as Kadeem, and yet this kid is only a 19-year-old freshman. The other guy that I think is going to likely have the impact early is Kyron Cartwright, the freshman point guard from Compton, California. You know, he started in the backcourt along with Chris Dunn in the exhibition game, you know, a week ago against Stonehill. And that did surprise some people because, you know, everybody thinks, well, Chris Dunn is the point. Well, Chris is a point, but at the same time, Chris has got the flexibility where he can slide over the two, and he's got to make guys come out and guard him. Now, I think that Providence's best team is probably still going to be when Chris is running the point, and a guy like Jalen Lindsey, the other freshman from Tennessee, Lindsey comes in at 6'7" and plays the two guard, which is a tremendous, you know, mismatch for most teams, just because of the length and the height involved there. I mean, you got a 6'4" point guard and Dunn and a 6'7" two guard. I mean, you know, goodness gracious, there are probably some Division I teams that don't go that big, you know, at the 3 and the 4 spot. So I think that might ultimately be their better team, but they're going to want to bring Kyron in a little bit because he brings a different skill set to the table. Wouldn't surprise me at all early in the season to see Kyron and Chris out there on the floor together, because I know that's one thing that they want to do with defensive pressure. And then you'll see, you know, Jalen probably work himself into the lineup more slowly, and a lot of that is because of the finger that he dislocated during the preseason practice. You'll have it splitted up and everything for, you know, the next week or two. So he won't really be free to do the kind of things that I think we'll expect of him later in the year. Doesn't mean he can't be effective. Doesn't mean he can't score or play well. But I don't think he'll be 100% for maybe a couple more weeks. So, but he will play, and I think that they'll probably go a different route before he's able to kind of earn his time then.
Great. So switching gears, John, this Saturday we're raising the Big East Tournament Championship banner, if I'm not mistaken. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yep. They're going to do the banner ceremony at 6:45, tip-off against Albany's at 7. So they'll do the banner ceremony starting at 6:45. You know, they want people to be in their seats early. So they're going to open up the gates to the dunk at 6 o'clock so folks can get in and get seated and be ready to go by 6:45, 15 minutes or so before tip-off.
Excellent. So last year was the first year of the new Big East, and Cowboy Senior and I were talking a little bit offline about how we love the home-and-home structure, and it's so refreshing after being in such a large conference. Is that kind of the overriding thought that you see? Do you feel the same way?
Yeah, the coaches Roger, they honestly love the home-and-home. They really feel like it's, you know, a true conference champion. Everybody gets a chance to play. Everybody else, you know, on the home floor and on the visitor's floor. And it's hard to argue with that sentiment. I know that there's still a lot of thought about potential expansion in the next couple of years, you know, for the Big East. And I think ultimately it will be television that will decide whether or not the Big East does that. Because I think if it's left up to the coaches, they would keep it right where it is at 10. And I think the Big East administration, you know, from Commissioner Val Ackerman on down, I think they're happy with the 10 because of the fact that they can do a true round robin and a true home and home. And I think that actually will help with, you know, potentially with RPI. So I think it'll take something extraordinary, you know, Fox to come to them and say, look, we'd really like to have a little more inventory maybe to sell. And so I think the teams that were mentioned, you know, when the new Big East or when the Big East relaunched, I should say, a year ago, the two teams schools that were most prominently mentioned were St. Louis and probably Dayton. Although I think there's some sentiment for Richmond as a possibility as well, but I still think, especially based on what we saw last year, you know, Dayton making it all the way to the Elite Eight. In fact, that you know, the Billikens being a Catholic school, Dayton also, you know, being a private school, I think those two make the most sense for the current makeup of the conference if they decide to go that route. And that is not a slam dunk. You know, if it happens, couple of years, maybe, certainly another year, but I can't imagine, you know, unless Fox is clamoring for more product, I really see the Big East, you know, hanging pat for a while. The coaches love, they love the way it is. And, I think they feel like, they even might have a better chance. And this is where it's going to really be incumbent upon the Big East to play well in out of conference play starting this year. Because I think last year getting only four teams into the tournament was a bit of a disappointment, even though, you know, 40% of your league, membership getting into the NCAA still sounds good overall. But, you know, the Big East, you know, unfortunately, you know, when in the Big East was, you know, 14, 15, 16 teams, the conference is getting in seven or eight teams, you know, in the tournament. And so the perception is that if you don't get, you know, six or seven teams, that it's down. But you realize there's only 10 teams in the league now, not the behemoth league of 16 that we had a couple of years ago. Because of that, I think, you know, the goal has to be to get half of your teams in the tournament. And that starts this year. And so I think it would definitely be considered a success if the league can get five teams to the tournament. Now, I don't know if that can happen. I certainly think four is doable again. I saw something online, yesterday, day before. Some, you know, knucklehead was saying, well, the Big East may only get two bids this year. And I'm like, what planet do you live on? Clearly, this is someone that either has, A, an agenda for another league, or B, is just stupid. It doesn't know anything about college basketball. So, you know, I think Villanova's there. I think Georgetown can be there. Xavier can be there. Providence can be there. St. John's can be there. You know, that's, you know, two sort of, I would say, semi-solid teams, and three other teams that certainly can be there. But those teams that can be there have work to do, and they need to win their fair share of non-league games, and they need to finish above 500 in conference play. And if they do, then I think the league will get done what they want to get done.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And Senior, I know you had some thoughts on the Friars' schedule this year.
Yes, oh my God, they are really playing a tough schedule. It's an iron schedule. I mean, you look at it and you see the number one team in the country there, at least in a lot of people's eyes, Kentucky. We're going to Kentucky to play them in Rupp Arena. I mean, normally you'd be starting off with kind of a cupcake schedule, but we're playing Albany Saturday night in the opener. That's a team that's been to the Big Dance the last 2 years in a row. We've got that tough little tournament at Mohegan Sun where we play Notre Dame. There's nothing wrong with their schedule, and the conference schedule is tough. And I echo John's thoughts about the conference. As a fan, from a fan's point of view, I really liked the new conference better because, I don't know, I was starting to kind of, when you don't play teams home and home, you kind of almost lose your identity as a conference, where seeing everybody twice, we're all the same type of schools, you have a chance for maybe some rivalries to develop. The Fox Sports coverage was so good that if you watched Fox Sports all through the basketball season, you had a real feel for the Big East Conference. And I think it was a successful first year. Obviously, as a Friar fan, it was very successful. The schools John's talking about adding would fit right into that very nicely. Also, looking at the Sports Illustrated preview, which came out last week, and they're about as reputable as you're going to get. They had five Big East teams in the Big Dance this year. They have Villanova, preseason number eight in the country. So we're getting some respect. Getting that TV contract, I think, was huge. And I obviously, we'll never have the old Big East again because football destroyed the Big East. But we had the new conference as it is now, and even the teams you talked about aren't these big football power schools. So I think this conference can really thrive as a pure basketball conference. And I think we're off to a great start.
Yeah, I have to second that sentiment. You know, I thought last year was a pretty solid start. The only thing that would have made the first year better is a little more success in the postseason. Yes. You know, so I think that's really the only negative that you can take away from last year. I think that has to be solved this year. Otherwise, Big East is going to continue to, you know, have its share of naysayers. So that's why I think it's incumbent upon the league to, you know, build successfully, but also build the non-conference, schedules up, and you still gotta win. You can play these teams, playing them is one thing. You gotta win a few of them too. And that's something that Ed Cooley and I have talked about at length. And he says that, you know, all the coaches in the league are pretty much on the same plate. The only school that might not quite be up to snuff just because of some of their old habits is Georgetown. But Georgetown's got the national rep, to be quite honest with you, that if they come out and they win some games, they're going to get top 25 votes anyway. And that's just because they're Georgetown and their program is, has evolved to the point where, you know, kind of like a Carolina or a Duke in the ACC, you know, Georgetown's given the benefit of the doubt. Providence isn't at that level yet, not where Georgetown and Villanova are. So the Friars need a couple more years, you know, if not a few more years of success like what we saw last year, you know, to get themselves back up in that sort of higher echelon of the Big East. And like the program was, Senior, like the program was back in the 70s when, you know, they went to the Final Four, and then, you know, when my partner Joey Hassett was playing, you know, they maintained, you know, extremely high level of national play. They were a nationally ranked team all the way through basically the 1970s. So, you know, it's going to take a little bit of building to get back to that level where a lot of fans hope that they could get. And I think that they're on their way. Last year was a great start. They might have been even a little bit of ahead of schedule from where, you know, Eddie thought that, you know, he would have them since he came to Providence. But, you know, you'll take what you can get. And I'll be surprised if they're not in the running, you know, at the end of the season for a good, solid, you know, postseason run. Hey, I see no reason why Providence can't go out and make a real effort at defending the conference title.
That would be great. You know, you mentioned the name a couple of times, Coach Cooley, and I think that was the best hiring. We had a run of very successful coaches, from Patino to Barnes to Gillen, and then not taking anything away from the next couple of guys that came, Tim and Keno, but they never, to me, they never really got it done on the recruiting end, and I feel like we've really hired the right guy this time. And I mean, you get to talk to him, you'll know more than I, but he seems like he really, really wants to be at Providence College, that there's nowhere he'd rather be. And give us some thoughts on what you think of Coach Cooley, John.
Well, first of all, in comparison to his predecessors at Providence, Ed has a passion, I think, that it was different from the passion that either Tim or Keno had. And I love working with both of those guys. I just think that their approaches, you know, Tim's worked for a while. As you recall, we had some couple of very good teams in the early 2000s, NCAA teams, and the 2004 team was nationally ranked for, you know, a good bit of the latter part of the year. And then unfortunately they didn't have postseason success, and that's one of the things that wore kind of thin on fans and ultimately wore thin on the administration. You know, and Keno learned at the hand and the feet of his father, who was obviously a very solid coach, obviously spent some time in the Big East at Boston College as well when he was a kid. But, you know, his thought process was coming here and basically going up and down on people, and the Big East has always been a rebounding defensive league first. And I think that's kind of played out over the course of 30-plus years. And his philosophy, while it was admirable, it didn't work here. And so that's why, you know, it ended up that way. I actually thought Keno was a pretty good recruiter. The problem was that he couldn't finish the deal. And Ed came in with a little bit of that you know, inner-city chip on his shoulder that, you know, there's no sense of entitlement, and this is his dream job, to come back to the city in which he was, you know, basically born and raised and get it done here. And he knows that, you know, having been in the Big East himself as an assistant at BC under Al Skinner, and he knows the territory in Rhode Island very well after having, you know, not only lived here and been an All-State kid at you know, at Central High School, but, you know, spent a year as an assistant under Al down at URI before moving on up to Boston College. So he knows the landscape, and then going to the college himself at Stonehill, which is just a stone's throw, you know, across the border. He knows the lay of the land. This indeed was coming home to him, unlike it was for, you know, his predecessors. And so you get somebody who's got some vigorish in the deal here. You know, he's got an interest in it. And he wants to cultivate that and see if he can make it grow a little. And that's something we really haven't had here since Dave Tavitt. You know, I mean, really, when you think about it, you haven't had that really since Gavitt. So because of that, I think that's why you're starting to see a little bit of success and maybe a little bit earlier than everybody had previously hoped.
That's true, you know, because of the string of great coaches that I talked about, namely like Rick Barnes and Pete Gillen and even Rick Pitino, we were their stepping stones. They did a great job here, but Providence was a stepping stone for them, and I don't.
Yeah, that's the problem. Yeah, that's definitely a problem when you have, you know, something that's seen as a stepping stone type of job, and the problem with that was, of course, though, and you know this senior as well as anybody, that the administration had to be behind those coaches. And, you know, Rick Pitino, when he left to go to a job that, you know, there's nobody was going to tell him, you know, well, you know, you can't go there, you know, and then we're going to try to stop him. And you were going from Providence to the New York Knicks. So there really wasn't a whole lot of, you know, nobody really, I realized it happened quickly, and there were people that were starting to see him go that thought he would stick around longer, but nobody could be sorry that he left for the position that he did, whether it worked out or not. As far as Barnes was concerned, and as far as Gillen were concerned, having obviously worked very closely with all of those guys as well during my tenure, those guys did not receive the backing really that they felt they needed from the school in order to make Providence a destination job as opposed to a stepping stone job. You know, there, you know, were some things that, you know, and Rick and I have talked about this offhanded, and even Pete and I have even talked about it a little bit. I remember a few years ago when Pete was doing the television coverage for CBS Sports Network when we were in Cancun during one of the preseason tournaments. Joaquino was the coach, and Pete and I had a long talk about the swimming pool for like 2 or 3 hours talking about how it was when he was, you know, coaching, and he says, you know, I still miss it. Loved Providence, loved all my time there. I feel like I'd still be there if we'd had some things happen. And I knew exactly what he was talking about. You know, there were some guys that they tried to get into school. They couldn't get into school, that the administration was just not going to budge on. And, you know, I think we all know that in order to play at a very high level, you know, schools need to have, you know, different strokes for different folks, for lack of a better phrase. And I'm not necessarily saying that that's what the administration is doing now for Ed, but had they been able to, you know, help their coach a little bit more, help them, then I think we might have seen some longer tenures in both instances. Because, you know, Rick left for Clemson because Clemson, you know, offered him a chance to compete in the ACC, and they were willing to, you know, basically do whatever needed to make that program successful. And it worked. It worked. Same thing with Pete when he left for Virginia. You know, it was up to Pete to keep the Virginia thing going, and he obviously couldn't sustain that. And maybe he, you know, kind of left at the right time. But in both cases, you know, I think had there had been different leadership at the top of the ladder at Providence College at the time, either one or both of those guys could have lasted a little bit longer.
Yeah, that would have been great, because I love both of those guys. I agree, especially Rick Barnes. I really liked Rick Barnes. I was taking evening classes at the school at the time, and I would go eat in the cafeteria between classes, and I felt like he had the team was like a family environment. He'd have the whole team in there eating, and his wife would be there, and you could see that she interacted and knew all the players really well. This guy wasn't only a great coach. This guy to me was a really good person. I really thought the world of Rick Barnes. I don't know if you had that same feeling for him, John.
Yeah, I do. I still do. I mean, I'm still friendly with him, and we communicate a couple times a year just because he coaches at my alma mater at Texas. So, you know, I'm always interested in what's going on with his program because, you know, I've got a little invested in Texas from my years and, you know, as a Texas ex and a dues-paying alumnus and all that kind of stuff. So, I'm glad he's had success. And, you know, I know that when they missed out on the NCAAs a couple of years ago, there were already some grumblings that, oh, my goodness, Texas is not going to the NCAAs for the first time in like 15 years. And I'm like, you know, that's Texas. That's just the way they are. That's what they expect there. And it'd be nice to get our program back to that level of expectation as well. But Rick has got unbelievable resources there and almost unlimited, you know, things that he can turn to. And, you know, he's shown that he can win. I hope that he gets a chance to produce a national champion. He can do that in the Big 12 there, especially, you know, playing the likes of, you know, Kansas and Oklahoma and Oklahoma State and, you know, some of the big time hoop programs that exist in that league. But, you know, that's one of the reasons why he left, Clemson to go there, because he knew he could win a national title there. And I think that's what, you know, a lot of people are expecting of him there. You know, Rick was always thought to be an unbelievable recruiter and just a so-so, you know, X and O's guy. I'd say he's gotten better at X's and O's, but I think he'd be one of the first to tell you that's probably not his forte. But his secret to success has been able to surround himself with consistently solid assistants that not only help him in the recruiting battles, but help him, you know, put winning teams down on the floor. The one thing that has hurt Rick, I think, as much as anything over the years, is Texas not being able to keep these kids in school for more than 1 or 2 years before they go out and go pro. You know, that decimated his team 2 years ago. And, you know, this year, one of the reasons why Texas is being mentioned as a potential top 10 team is because he's been able to keep some of these McDonald's All-Americans around. So I hope he's able to do that and keep them competitive, because he's a good guy and he's a pretty good coach.
Isn't that kind of the landscape of college basketball, though, John? The big-time schools who get the McDonald's All-Americans and the great players, like Kentucky would be the poster child for this. They have guys stay 1 or 2 years, and they're so talented that they're going to be there. But that's what gives those mid-major teams, a team like George Mason or Miami of Ohio, that make a run once in a while, because they're not getting the guys that are quite as big-time. But once in a while, they're going to come up with a senior-laden team that has experience and has enough talent that they can make a run and compete with the more talented but younger big-time schools.
That's how you do it.
Keep the big, the top 10 players.
Yeah, that's how those Cinderella teams do it.
Yeah.
So, John, we know Bryce Cotton just finished up one heck of a career here at PC.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Senior and I were kind of going back and forth on this, and I said, for me, he's the best college player that I've seen at PC since Murdoch. And I think, you know, Gomes, you could probably throw in there. How do you feel about that? Where would you rank him kind of on the pantheon?
He has to go down, obviously, with the great ones, literally, because he's, you know, top five scorer all time in Providence College history, which is amazing when you think that he basically was an afterthought as a recruit by Keno Davis. Popped him in and offered him a D1 scholarship in August, less than a month before classes actually started. So I think that's a remarkable story. But then, you know, Ed Cooley's had success with guys like that. Al Skinner's had success with guys like that, you know, in their past. And no reason why that can't still happen these days, because some good players slip through the cracks. He will be, in my mind, considered one of the players at Providence that did the most with the least. And that's not, I don't say that in denigrating fashion. What I mean is that, you know, the positions that he had to play, and the fact that, you know, it was really only a 5 or 6 man rotation his senior year. So he had to play, you know, 38 to 40 plus minutes a game, which he did. And he did it. He may have been one of the single best conditioned basketball players in Providence College history. I'm not sure there had been, I'm not sure there could be many more than that. And that includes Murdoch, and that includes Gomes, you know, as all Americans, because, Bryce just, he was like the Energizer Bunny. And he added talent on top of that. So, he's going to be missed. I'm sure there will be an occasion, you know, at some point in time this year where a couple of guys on the floor are looking for Bryce's ghost out there to get the ball to or to get the ball from. Because I remember that was the case when Eric Murdoch, if he graduated in 91, that, you know, some of the players kind of were like, you know, stagnant out there. Like, okay, you know, so when is EMT, when is Eric Murdoch time going to get here? And of course he never came, and it's because they were just kind of waiting for somebody else to make a move, because Eric always did. And that's really what happened last year with Bryce. You know, the guys would wait for Bryce to make a move, and he did. Now it's going to be incumbent upon LaDante Henton to make a move. I think he generally wants to be the guy when it comes down to crunch time. I want the ball in my hands. He may have to fight Tyler Harris for it, but, and I mean that, I love Tyler. I think he's a great kid, great talent, long, you know, I want to continue to see him, you know, exhibit, you know, court awareness more than anything else. I think that would help him improve and get him closer, you know, to where he wants to go, which is eventually, you know, the pros. But LaDante should be the guy. He's hit big shots in the past. He's not afraid to step up and take them, and I hope that the guys rally around him in that regard.
Yeah, and talking about Henton, at least from a observed fan's point of view, say, you know, about the first half of last season, he would look so good sometimes, and then you wouldn't know he was on the floor sometimes.
Yeah,
and then it seemed like mid-season or so, something just clicked with him where he was, you know, he was just a beast the rest of the season. I have very, very high expectations for him this year. See, you as well, Senior?
Yes. Oh, yeah. My word for LaDante Henton, when I think of LaDante Henton, the word that comes to my mind is warrior. He is an absolute warrior. When you needed a big rebound, a guy his size, I mean, he wasn't that big, he'd be the guy sticking his nose in, getting that big rebound. You needed somebody to knock down a big three, and it wasn't Bryce, it seemed like it would be LaDante. That kid is tough as his nails, and yeah, I think he definitely has it in him to be the guy to step up and be the leader of this team. Warrior. That's the way I look at LaDante.
He will definitely be that, guys. And you know, the beauty of it is, though, that I think this team is deep enough where, you know, if a team has done a pretty good job of marking LaDante during the course of the game, that you'll have Chris who can, you know, drive and penetrate and get to the rim at will, I think, on just about anybody. You've got Tyler, who's not afraid to take the shot from the wing, and that's his favorite spot, you know, in the baseline corner jumper that he's particularly adept at. You know, I think you'll probably find each of those three guys. And who's to say one of the freshmen might not develop that kind of a role as well? You know, as far as Chris Dunn is concerned, he's getting to the rim very similarly like Shamgod did back in that 97 run, you know, to the Elite Eight. There are very few guys that can stop him. If I'm somebody that's trying to defend Chris Dunn, if he stays healthy, I'm definitely playing off of him and making him pull up. The problem with that is that he actually has improved his short range jumper. I think he's actually pretty decent from, you know, between the foul line and the top of the key, and that, you know, I'd say 15 to 17 foot range, he's improved. I still don't think he's a pure 3-point shooter. And so you might, you know, see teams, you know, willing to give him that, but his shot is definitely improved. It's going to have to continue to improve throughout the course of the year. But Chris's deal is that he's so quick and he's so strong. He's going to be able to blow by guys, and it's going to be up to someone to step in and see if they can't, you know, take it upon themselves to pick up a charge. And, you know, that's going to be very, very hard, I think, for teams to do this year.
You know, we talked about the guys we lost, and we're saying perimeter shooting might be something that's not our huge strength this year. It's really too bad that Josh Fortune left, isn't it? Because he was developing into he was contributing more and more down the stretch last year, hitting more of those big shots. He might have had the nicest stroke on the team. It's really too bad that they could have used him this year.
Well, he got better last year as the season progressed. There's no doubt. He had that great game against St. John's, you know, scoring 24 against them in the tournament. And without that, you know, they probably don't beat St. John's that night to have a chance to move on in the Big East tournament. So, you know, I can only surmise a couple of things. One, I never really saw him having any, you know, overt problems with any of his teammates. What I think happened is that he felt like, excuse me, through his performance last year, that he had earned the right to be, you know, I guess a go-to guy in his own right. And and I think that Ed and the team saw it a little differently, that, you know, he was really the ultimate role player. And I also think that he kind of felt like the team, the program, might have over-recruited a little bit, you know, in going out and getting, you know, someone in particular like Jalen Lindsey, you know, to come in. And of course, they had Junior Lumumba sitting out last year. So because of that, I think he felt like, well, you know, I think I've earned my time. And yet here you are, you got these guys coming in. And so I want to be assured that I'm going to play. And just, you don't know. I mean, kids have to make decisions. This is how kids learn in life. You know, they learn by making their own decisions. And when they make bad decisions, they have to learn to live with it. And so, you know, I can't say that it was the best decision, but maybe it was the best one for him at the time that he made it. And I wish him well. But you're right, we'll miss him.
but I don't think it's a death knell either.
That's good.
So, John and Senior, you can go first.
Okay.
Best regular season victory in the Providence College history that you one of you guys maybe have witnessed.
Okay, that's an easy one for me. Michigan, I believe it was either 76 or 77. Michigan came in. We used to have host a tournament at the, what was the Providence Civic Center then, called the Fleet Classic, a four-team tournament. Michigan came into that tournament number one in the country. They had lost the national title game the previous year to the team that a lot of the experts call the greatest college team of all time, the Indiana team with Quinn Buckner and Scotty May and Kent Benson and Bobby Wilkerson. That Michigan team featured Phil Hubbard and Ricky Green, and a PC team that featured a guy that could shoot the ball from just about anywhere. You could knock him in from out of the state, a good friend of John's named Joe Hassett. To lead into what happened, in the first round of the tournament, the night before we played Michigan, we played Texas, John's alma mater, the Texas team coached by Abe Lemons. I can only remember. The guy, I remember a rugged guard named Ron Baxter. They were a good team.
Yep.
And they came out.
Ron Baxter, right.
They came out and played zone against the Friars that night, and Joey was on. Joey put on one of the best shooting displays I've ever seen in my life. He was knocking them in from streets away from the dunk. I'm not kidding you. And there was no three-point line then. It didn't matter. He shot them. He shot them out of the building. He blew the roof off just shooting them out of the zone. And I think, in my mind, that had an effect on Michigan, and they came out and played us man the next night. And we had a 6'9 forward on the team, a left-hander named Bruce Soup Campbell, who was our man. Nobody could guard him man-to-man. And it was a great game. It was a double overtime win, and Soup went crazy. They couldn't stop him. We had, I believe, a 25 or 26-year-old center named Bob Cooper, who had served time in the Air Force. That's why he was that age before he came in. I believe he blocked 10 shots that night. He was blocking Phil Hubbard's shots all over the place. The place was just crazy. It was such a great night. I can still picture the play winning double overtime. Soup, we're down by one. Soup drives the lane. The defense collapses on him. He throws a little bounce pass to a center named Bobby Masophagus, who hits a little bank shot from the wing to win the game. And I can remember then they had an all-tourney team, so you couldn't flood the court. Nobody went on the floor, but they announced the all-tourney team and the MVP, so people were around. And I swear, for 15, 20 minutes, and I don't even think we were ranked going into that game, the entire dunk and we're number one. I mean, I see a lot of great games at the dunk. I remember Ernie Lewis hitting the three at the buzzer to beat Georgetown. But that game stands out as the best game I ever saw there. And Joey set them up the night before, but there's no way that team was going to play any zone against us because they saw what he did the night before, and Soup just carried us. It was definitely the greatest game I ever saw. Definitely the greatest regular season victory in the history of the program.
That's a real good one. Great story. Absolutely great story. I've heard the same things from Joey. I have to admit that what I have to offer probably pales in comparison to that one, but I'll give you two that stand out in my mind. One would be, I believe it was December of 2003 when we played at Madison Square Garden against Illinois. And I remember that night, Donnie McGrath had an unbelievable game for the Friars, and they played against, I think it was, trying to remember the quick little guard that Illinois had. See, you might remember him. What the heck was his last name? Now see all these names are running. The years are starting to run together on me.
Was it the other D. Brown? Am I right?
Yes, D. Brown.
Not D. Brown from the Celtics. The other D. Brown.
Different D. Brown. Yeah,
the water.
Yes, it was the other D. Brown. That's right. And the other kid, Darren. What the heck is his last name? Still playing in the league. He plays for Brooklyn. Darren Williams.
Yep, Darren Williams.
Thank you. Yeah, it was on the Illinois team, And I just remember Providence could not miss that night. Randall Hanke had one of his best games ever as a Friar. And because it was at the Garden and because Dick Vitale was doing the game on television on ESPN and Providence played lights out ball that particular night, that really sort of, I think, propelled them, you know, to that NCAA berth in 2004. The other one I got to come up with, you know, it was ironically, and probably aren't a lot of people that remember this, was 2007, was it 07 or 08? 2007, when number one Pittsburgh came into the dunk and the Friars beat the number one team, beat the Pitt Panthers. That was a night that actually I was not there. I had been given permission. I had been given permission by the college to go to a television game for ESPN that night because ESPN called me at the last second and said, hey, there's a game up at Boston College. I know you're playing, but before we turn to somebody else, we'd love to see if you could do it. And obviously, you know, television pays a lot more money than radio does. And so I, you know, asked the school if they wouldn't mind because I figured, oh, we're playing Pittsburgh. We're going to get crunched, all right? So the school said, absolutely, you can go, no problem. They don't have any problem with you doing that. That's fine. Thanks for asking, all that kind of stuff. So and I went and made my paycheck, and Pittsburgh, you know, the Friars ended up beating Pittsburgh on the dunk floor. And I remember I took so much crap from the television truck. People asked about the Boston College came loose over there. I don't even remember who the hell Boston College played that night, but I'll be honest with you. I kept, you know, my little laptop computer at the time nearby, you know, getting score updates as best as I could. And I just kept shaking my head with the goalie, and I said, oh, my God, they're going to win, they're going to win, they're going to win. And I'm not there. I just, it was hard for me to concentrate on doing the television game. And then, like I said, the BC people, you know, poked fun at my expense, the whole TV truck, you know, kind of, you know, because they all knew, and they were all giving me updates and, you know, and making it really hard for me to concentrate that whole night. So I was there in spirit, most definitely, because nights like that just don't come along all the time.
So I have one, again, pales in comparison to you guys, but one that I remember from, I'm 35, like I said, so I was a kid. And it wasn't too often that we had, like, real good West Coast teams come into Providence. And Senior took me to a game. It was against U of A with Chris Mills, when Chris Mills was their best player and they were in the top 10.
Oh, yeah.
And the Friars weren't very good that year. So we went there thinking it was just going to be, you know, the good chance there'd be a wipeout the other way. And I don't know if you remember this, Dad, but Trent Forbes went just ballistic in the first half. And we had been watching him his whole career, and I don't think he'd ever really played like that. And the Friars got a win against U of A, and it was awesome.
That's a really good one, Roger. And I would tell you that the year before that, when they played out at Arizona, that was the year that Eric Murdoch set the McHale Center, where Arizona plays, scoring record that stood, I think, until like a year or two ago.
Hey, yeah, that's right.
U of A got the Friars back in the final eight, though, unfortunately.
That was a great game.
Yes.
Yeah, that was a tough one. I got another one at the dunk. Now, were you the announcer in the Gordy Chiesa years?
That was the year right before I got there.
Okay, well, it's the Gordy Chiesa we got tickets to a game. Roger was real young. And I get home, and we put the news on before we're leaving for the game, and we find out that day, Marty Conlin and some, and the team was going nowhere anyway. Everything was a mess. Marty Conlin and somebody else walked off the team. I can't remember who the other guy was, but I couldn't believe it. This great kid, this perfect kid, Marty Conlin, walked off the team. I'm like, I don't even feel like going to the game. We're playing Georgetown. They're real good. And we beat them. It was one of the only bright spots of that whole season. We beat Georgetown that night.
Wasn't that Carlton Screen that also walked off with him?
Yeah, okay, maybe it was Paco, yeah. So, yeah, we were playing without Marty and Screen. And we didn't have a very good team. We weren't having a very good year to begin with. Everything was a mess with Gordy. And we knocked off Georgetown that night. It was just the flukiest thing. Another one I remember, Roger would definitely remember this. Ray Allen's senior year, I think they were number three in the country. And Eric Williams led us to a victory over him in the Duncan. We had some rowdy UConn fans behind us, and I almost got into it with the UConn fans after the game.
What? Hey, how about the UConn game? How about the UConn game at Storrs that Ryan Gomes lit up a Mecca Okafor, and Ian Calhoun went ballistic afterwards?
I remember that one.
That's right.
That's another really good one.
When he was dropped, was at the press conference when he dropped the F bombs. He kept saying, "I effed up."
Oh yeah.
Hey, you guys are right. I recruited him. I effed up. All right. I've heard enough about it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's a pretty memorable one too, right there.
Yep, there's a lot of them, you know. There's a lot of them. And for this little tiny school on Smith Hill, the basketball tradition is pretty unbelievable, really, that, you know, we can sit here and go on and on about great games. I can remember sitting in my pajamas as a little kid, and that must have been like 65 or 66. There was a tournament in December that they'd run in Madison Square Garden every year called the Holiday Festival. And my three older brothers were there, and it turned into this duel. We were playing BC, and the whole place was rooting for BC. For some reason, they liked us there. And Jimmy Walker scored that night, and BC had a guard named John Austin, who I think scored like 44. It was kind of like the Larry Bird, Dominique Wilkins duel, you know, down the stretch of the game. One guy hit a shot, the other guy hit a shot. The whole Madison Square Garden was chanting Walker's name. Walk, walk, walk.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know if you remember him at all, John. He's obviously the greatest player.
Absolutely remember Jimmy. I did get a chance to meet him when he came back around. I think it may have been a year or two before he passed away. But I remember one of the first things that I did when I moved up the Northeast, and one of my first trips into New York, I went to see a live show of Bill Mazur, who did a show on WFAN at the time when sports radio was still in its infancy. And I went to Mickey Mantle's there on Central Park to see the show, and because I wanted to meet Bill Mazur, and I introduced myself and told him that I was from Providence, and that even before I could tell him I was getting ready to start doing the Friar games, he said, "Providence." He said, "My goodness, the best basketball player I ever saw at Madison Square Garden was the night that Jimmy Walker scored 50 on Boston College." I didn't even have to bring it up, and he just went off on it. So I thought that was so cool that kind of an influence on that kind of a superstar in New York could be had, from little old Providence College and a guy like Jimmy Walker.
So great stuff, guys. Great stuff. And those are stories. And, as you said, Cowboy Senior, for a small program, there certainly have been a lot of memories. And I'm a pretty young guy, and I've had a lot of memories. And but I love the direction of the program with Cooley, and I'm really looking forward to the season. And John, we so appreciate you coming on. This was fantastic to talk with someone with your breadth of knowledge and experience with this was just awesome for me, and I'm sure the senior would say the same.
Well, I totally enjoyed it.
I appreciate you doing that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Very good. So that's the whole sports lounge tonight, guys. So for Mr. Rook and for Cowboy Senior, I'm the Cowboy, Roger. No, we'll see you next time. Thanks so much. Sexy, sexy. Baby, are you ready to lick me sexy? Sexy. Take off your shoes and suck me sexy. Sexy. Baby, we'll take it and we're on for sexy. Freak of the week, are you in the mood to fly through the stars with Jack in boots?
sexy.